TPR tells the stories of our city, our struggles and our triumphs. Leaving a legacy gift to Texas Public Radio helps keep those stories alive. Find out how to create your legacy at tpr.org/legacy.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Spanish rule in North America spanned more than three centuries. The conquest north from Mexico to the American Southwest was difficult. Spain established fortified military settlements known as presidios in these mostly unknown northern territories to protect the frontier, maintain peace, and protect inhabitants from natives they deemed hostile. Archaeologist, historian, and author Jorge Luis García Ruiz has written about the Spanish trek northward in the book Presidio, Soldiers of the King in New Mexico. It's part of a series he's completing on documented Spanish history on the northern frontier. García says the Spanish who were making this journey were actually mestizos, people of mixed ancestry.
Do you think, like many historians thought, till now, about those men, Spaniards, conquer, killing everybody. This is different from the Anglo-Saxon conquest. The Anglo-Saxon conquest came with already made families, and they need the land. The problem with Spain is that in that moment we had a very few people living in Spain, so when they were conquering the territory, they were conquering the souls, and you need people over the land. You need people to convert to Catholicism, to Christianism, and made them subjects of the crown. And that requires a different conquest. It's very difficult. The problem with when some Indians is when the pandemics came. But if you have the need of people to work the lands, to grow the crops, to grow also the cattle, you cannot wipe them out. So the conquest is very different. You need the people in the land. That requires with the mestizo to make a mix between the Spaniards coming here and the local population. And yes, the native population is going down, but at the same time, the mestizo population is going up. And you need those peoples, and those peoples were the ones who made the conquest of the north. To go to Rio Grande River, and in the case of New Mexico, even beyond the Rio Grande. So that was the step-by-step, day-by-day conquest, because that conquest wasn't a military conquest. You need to create a town with people living there, which is the tool that you use to convert more Indians to the Catholicism.
And people can use kind of San Antonio as an example of that.
Yeah, San Antonio is a very example of that. The title of the book is New Mexico, but it's also very related to Texas. And we have three axes in the conquest of the North. First of all was the New Mexico, what we call today New Mexico. The second one, that includes El Paso, because El Paso is now Texas, and because of the modern borders, we think that the history of El Paso is of Texas. No, El Paso is the history of New Mexico, because Juan de Oñate and the conquest that took the Rio Grande up north, and that was a geographical thing and is not with the modern borders. And that happens at the end of the 16th century. So then we have the second axis, which is the Texas. And the Texas happened one century, 100 years after that. And finally, we got California. So in origin, I write this book in Spanish. And it's a bigger book, and it's very heavy to read. So for the English version, I decided to split the book in those three axes. So now it's New Mexico. After this will come the Texas, and at the end I hope to be healthy to write the California. But this New Mexico is telling the first years of that conquest up north, from Mexico City to the Rio Grande, and then to New Mexico.
Well, Jorge Luis, you are a historian, you are an archaeologist, and this book, just like the ones that we've spoken to in the past about where you wrote about birth records, it's very heavily focused, your research is, on existing documentation. You have done extensive looking into a lot of the Spanish documents that record a lot of these presidios and missions and the travels. It's got to be a really extensive process. I mean, where did you go to get this information? Who did you get it from? And how do you organize it all in order to put it together for publication?
Well, we have a lot of archives. The Spanish archives of Indies in Seville could have maybe 90 million documents. And I'm not talking about pages. I'm talking about documents. Because, for example, the document that I used to tell the story of Oñate conquering New Mexico is a document about 4,000 pages. So it's 90 million documents, and some of them have thousands of pages. So I took only some documents. In Mexico, Archivo General de la Nación is very difficult to calculate, and they still have boxes and probably, I don't know, maybe 20-30% of the archives is not even unpacked. And could be millions and millions of documents. And we have archives in Mexico City, which are not the Archivo General de la Nación, which is the Franciscan archive. And this is a beautiful archive because it has all those documents in the foundation of Texas. And we have the Jesuitic archive, and we have archives in every single town in Mexico. And, well, the point here is that the American historiography, the English historiography so far, they didn't want to read in Spanish. So that's a very big problem, because when you try to explain a history without the documents, at the end you are inventing that history. And you are bending that history to your own ideas. And what I tried with this book was to settle the ground and start again. And, okay, you know, to take in account all those documents that we have.
Jorge Luis Garcia Ruiz is an archaeologist, historian, and researcher. He's the author of Presidio, Soldiers of the King in New Mexico. It documents the movement north of Spanish explorers from Mexico through Texas into New Mexico. When we come back, some of the atrocities committed by Spanish explorers fed into the so-called Black Legend.
Everyone has a black legend, and for the people to understand this, Mexico has a black legend today, because here in the United States, we are sharing the idea that Mexicans, all of them, are killers and robbers.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Almost 1,500 miles separates Santa Fe, New Mexico from Mexico City. For the Spanish explorers who were making their way north from the Spanish capital, it was a five-month, often deadly journey through dangerous terrain. Juan de Oñate was one of those 16th-century explorers/conquistadors. He and the settlers on his expedition made it to the Rio Grande near El Paso in 1598. He's said to have executed disillusioned settlers who refused to continue the treacherous journey north. Near present-day Albuquerque, New Mexico, Oñate and his soldiers massacred hundreds of natives in what was known as the Acoma Massacre. He ordered that all native men captured in the skirmish have one foot amputated. Two others had their right hands removed. Other indigenous survivors were sentenced to servitude for 20 years. Oñate's bloodthirsty, vindictive actions fueled hatred of the Spaniards across the region, a sentiment that continues to this day. Archaeologist and historian Jorge Luis García Ruiz writes about this chapter of Spanish colonial history in the book Presidio, Soldiers of the King in New Mexico. This bloody tale and other expeditions are told in the words of the people who witnessed and documented them. García says Oñate's tale in particular feeds into what's known as the Black Legend, a narrative sometimes propagandist in nature that demonizes the Spanish Empire as savage and cruel.
We have a lot of false claims between one to the other. And this is something that was used and is used today to claim about the Black Legend against the Spaniards. So what I'm trying with this book, and I promise you that I was very objective, very just in the writing of the chapters, and despite I'm a Spaniard, I put everything that I found in the documents, good or bad, to have the fair idea of what happens. Everyone has a Black Legend, and for the people to understand this, Mexico has a Black Legend today, because here in the United States we are sharing the idea that Mexicans, all of them, are killers and robbers, and this is a Black Legend. The United States has a Black Legend. Everybody has a Black Legend. So what I've tried to this book is to, okay, we have this. I respect your point of view, but what the documents are saying is this. Now, maybe you want to change your bias, your prejudices, or you want to push a little bit further in the Black Legend, but the problem with all those propaganda things is that when you confront a person that knows the truth, you look like an idiot pushing all this propaganda. And I've been in Mexico a lot of times. I have a lot of friends there. And I can tell you that Mexico is beautiful, and there are beautiful people there. Don't deserve the Black Legend that we are pushing against them because of some groups, some of the narcos or whatever. So everyone has a Black Legend.
Well, I think it's also interesting historically to know that around this time of the Spaniards moved northward into New Mexico, that this is also the time where what we know about U.S. history, what we all learn about U.S. history, is happening on the country's east coast, the 13 colonies and the move towards independence for the United States and the move westward and the eventual clash there of that manifest destiny. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I'm just now working in a new book about the Spanish help to the American Revolution. This is something that, because of that Black Legend, historians in the United States, they tried for 250 years almost to wipe out, to erase. And we got documents that show that the Spanish help was even bigger than the French help. So I'm working on that for a book that I need to finish before Christmas. When you are a prince, to get the crown of king, you need to kill your father. That's the first. And second, you need to kill his heritage, because you are the new king and everything you do is much better than what your dad did. And this is something that happened here. So the United States were in a prince situation, and in that moment the king was Spain. And they needed to kill the king, and they needed to kill the heritage. For example, we have that narrative that they pushed more than 200, 300 years, more or less, saying that before 1836, nothing happened in San Antonio, Texas. How we explain then the stones making the missions? So that's the point. You need to erase everything that happened before you, and this is what happened. The colonies had a big help from France, but also from Spain. And they didn't recognize that. So it's very difficult to explain a story when you just try to wipe out a very important chapter of your story. So this is what I'm working right now. We have a country, 250 years old, that are not acknowledging that we had in the United States a much deep old story, because we just decided we are a new thing. But if those people, those historians in the universities, in the East Coast, they will be accepting that we have a beautiful Hispanic, I'm not saying Spanish, I'm saying Hispanic history coming from, yes, from Europe, but also from all South America and south of the border. It will be much, much better for the United States, but they decided not to have that part of history. So this, for me, it's kind of stupid. I'm sorry to say that.
Well, I mean, as a historian, you're also seeing a crackdown on what is being allowed to be taught now. There is pressure on educators, especially in public schools and in public universities here in Texas, to not teach certain aspects of history that may make certain populations feel uncomfortable about themselves. I'm sure you have thoughts about this sort of selective way that students are learning about history instead of really getting this broader picture like what you're talking about.
The point here is that if you accept some part of your history, you have to explain a lot of what you did for the last 200 years. So you know that I have also the, it's more than a theory, because I discovered that the origin of the name of the state, Texas, the narrative they are pushing is false. There is a document that says that narrative is false.
Now, which narrative is that?
That Texas is a native word that means friends. Well, Texa is a singular name. If you made it plural, you say Texas, and it's the Castilian name for the bald cypress.
A tree.
Yeah. And it's quite a coincidence that the Texas Indians were living in an enormous forest of Texas tree in that part of the border between Louisiana and Texas, the Sabine River. Sabine is a synonym of bald cypress. Again, in Spanish language, is Sabino. The French came and they say, okay, how is the name of this river? This river in Spanish is Sabino. Okay, make it French, so it's Sabine. Sabine is the name of the tree, and the other name of the tree is Texa. In Spanish, Teja, obviously. So it's quite a coincidence, and what I have is the proof that the original narrative is false. The same document is demonstrating it. But imagine how difficult it will be to accept that for 300 years they were pushing that narrative, and now they need to change the road signs, all the books telling that false history. It's impossible. So what is better is just to hide it. No, it doesn't exist. And this is the same that happens in the schools. I was teaching high school for several years here in Spanish, but because they don't want to hear my field, my major, which is history. Okay, I will teach you Spanish, but I had access to the textbook of history, and I don't understand why in those books, 700 pages, there are only two or three dedicated to the Spanish in America. It's part of your roots. It's part of the roots of half of your population, right? Which is even worse. So you are not telling the story of the whole country. You are telling the story only about the white people in the 13 colonies. So this is even worse. This is not just an insult to the history, to the Europeans, Spanish. No, it's an insult for the Hispanic Americans, because they are not telling the history of those guys. So now that I'm thinking of leaving.
Of leaving the U.S., you will
yeah,
be
Yeah, I'm
leaving.
Kind of free to express more freely what I think about this.
Do you have any final words that you'd like to say about this book, Presidio Soldiers of the King in New Mexico, before we wrap things up today?
We have a gap, a very big gap, between the academic studies that we make in universities and the street and the common people. There is a big gap. And with the social media, the gap is growing. And to read a very complicated history book, academic book, this is something that simply is not going to happen. So what I try to with this book is to make it easy. It's an academic book, but it's very easy to read. It's like a novel. This was my idea. We need to share the knowledge, and we need to make it easy. When we have a story that could be told in a beautiful small chapter, and we decided to make a book very complicated to read, that story is hiding something. Okay, you need to make it easy. And this is what I did with these 20 chapters in this book, is to show the original documents that sometimes is beautiful, because the person that we're living in that moment is telling a beautiful story about, well, sometimes beautiful, sometimes not so beautiful, about the real life. It's transporting you very quickly to that time. So it's beautiful to read. And what I did is just clean those documents of the non-important things to make it readable in our times. So it's an academic book, but it's like a novel.
And it has gorgeous photos and illustrations throughout, I have to say.
Yeah, it's the way I work. I'm very visual. So I'm not only need to tell you, okay, there is a document that says something. No, I need to show you the document. This is how it works. I'm basically an archaeologist. And there are historians and there are archaeologists. So the historian is the one who just share with you the documents. The archaeologists, we are the scientifics of the historians. Yes, I know that I'm both in this moment, certified by two universities, so I can say this. There are a black legend about the archaeologists that we don't deserve the same level than the historian, and it's quite the opposite, okay? Because we need to tell a story that the historians are telling, but we need to prove it. Prove it with documents, with field trips, with pictures. This is what I did. For example, I found where the seven cities of Cibola were located. The historians so far here in America, they were located in thousands of different places. And I found this because I've been walking through the Frio River, going from Phoenix, Arizona to Flagstaff, also in Arizona, to check the Spanish documents one by one in the place. So this is what an archaeologist is doing, and this is what I share with my readers in this book. So yes, I'm a historian, but mainly I'm an archaeologist, which we are the scientifics of the history.
Jorge Luis Garcia Ruiz is an archaeologist, historian, researcher, and author. His latest book is one in a series documenting the history of the northern frontier during the Spanish colonial era. It's called Presidio, Soldiers of the King in New Mexico. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.